Okay, and welcome to April 6th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joe DeCristoforo. I have lots of regular listeners out there, and I appreciate all your input on the comment board at joesdailyushistorylesson.com.
And now, let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay, so stand up, everyone. Face the flag, right hand over the heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, beautiful. So getting right to it now on today's program, America enters World War I.
Well, wish a happy birthday to James Watson, DNA co-founder. Another happy birthday to legendary documentary writer Sheila Nevins. And Tyler becomes president.
Okay, so let's get started.
1917. America enters World War I. That was just one too many ships that the Germans sunk. Western Europe didn't have a lot of fight left in them. Even though the U.S. wanted neutrality from World War I, it appeared that war was just inevitable. In 1914, Americans didn't believe that war would actually take place. So imagine the tourists in Western Europe that were caught by surprise. America was still paying out large-scale loans to France and Britain so they could keep up the fight. And eventually, Germany threw the international rules out the window and started targeting all ships headed towards Britain, whether they were merchant ships or not. The Germans sunk the British-owned Lusitania in 1915, then offered military alliance with Mexico in the famous Zimmermann telegram that was intercepted and decoded by the British, and American ships like the Housatonic were getting sunk in the North Atlantic. President Woodrow Wilson asked Congress for a war to end all wars that would make the world safe for democracy. And on this day in 1917, Congress voted yes and approved funding and troops. On June 26th, 14,000 troops landed in France to begin training for combat. Up until that point, years of fighting led to a stalemate on the Western Front, and America's fresh troops sparked the turning point in the war in favor of the Allies. When the war finally ended on November 11, 1918, more than 2 million American soldiers had served on the battlefields of Western Europe. Approximately 50,000 lost their lives. All right.
1928. Happy birthday, Dr. James Watson, one of the co-founders of DNA. Ah, yes. The good old double helix. The building blocks of life. The house of who we are. Unlocking the keys of life as we know it. The deoxyribonucleic acid. If I said that correctly, I'm going to be very proud of myself. Yeah. Born on this day in 1926 in Chicago, Illinois, a young James studied the World Almanac as a kid and won $100 in a brainy nerd radio contest, which he used to buy binoculars. Yes, folks. By the time he was 15, the same age I was, when I found pencils sticking out of both nostrils of my nose hysterical in class, Watson was headed to the University of Chicago, where he excelled at zoology and biology. Come on, man! Yeah, one of those kids. After receiving his PhD in 1950, he headed to Cambridge in the UK and began working with Francis Crick to reveal the double helix. The double helix, or two strands that would coil around each other, fitting together almost symbiotically, for lack of a better word, when uncoiled, can produce copies of the original, which explains how hereditary genes are passed down from generation to generation. This discovery was made in May of 1953, but the world was not ready for it. Heck, during the 1990s, it couldn't even be taken seriously enough to get O.J. Simpson a guilty verdict in his murder trial, despite 45 bloodstains he left behind. By the way, I get into more detail on that on my July 22nd ep. In fact, it would take a few decades for DNA to become used in applications such as genetic engineering, stem cell research, and DNA fingerprinting. However, in 1962, he would get his well-deserved glory by earning the Nobel Prize for Physics, which he won along with Dr. Crick, Maurice Wilkins, and Rosalind Franklin, or Rosie to her friends. In 1968, Dr. Watson published The Double Helix, a personal account of the discovery of the structure of DNA, considered one of the biggest contributions in science history. He taught at Harvard for a while, then moved his studies and teachings of neurobiology and molecular genetics to the Cold Springs Harbor Lab in New York. Since then, he's waged a war on cancer and promoted the Human Genome Project and published Molecular Biology of the Gene, which would become the go-to manual biology textbook. After that came Molecular Biology of the Cell and Recombinant DNA. In 2014, a writer for The Guardian attacked Dr. Watson by calling him a racist and sexist for suggesting once that African Americans that he worked on were not on the same intelligence playing field as he was. Newsflash! Almost nobody, despite what race you are, is on his educational playing field. And that he was sexist because his former partner Rosie Franklin was beautiful but plain. I'm not really sure how that's a sexist remark against Rosie, but he still wants Dr. Watson's credentials taken away because of those remarks. And life moves on. The work of Watson, Crick, Franklin, Wilkins, and the others is considered the most important contribution to biology of mankind, or womankind, in case The Guardian is listening, since Darwin's evolution contribution. Happy birthday, Dr. James! Sad. 1939, happy birthday, Sheila Nevins, one of the most influential documentary writers in history. I should get a lesson from her. Sheila was born April 6, 1939, and grew up in a Jewish family in Manhattan. She had a wealthy uncle who helped her with schooling, and she was able to obtain a BA in English in 1960. Her career would soon flourish as she became an actress, writer, and producer through the 60s and 70s, and hired by HBO as the director of documentary programming in 1979. In the 1980s, she had a production company and later returned to HBO to become vice president of documentary programming, and then in 2000, was inducted to the Broadcasting and Cable Company's Hall of Fame. In 2011, was honored by the Directors Guild of America for her unwavering commitment to documentary filmmakers and the advancement of the documentary genre. In 2013, won the Women's Achievements Award, and by 2016, was awarded with a record number of 32 Primetime Emmy Awards. Sheila took home the Exceptional Merit in Documentary Filmmaking Award for Jim, the James Foley Story, a biography of the U.S. war correspondent. For the record, Nevins shared the record for the most Emmy Awards nomination received by an individual, which is 74. A record she shares with Hector Ramirez. Congratulations, Sheila.
Now, 1841. His Excellency becomes President of the United States. Now, before I explain why John Tyler was named His Excellency, I should tell you who he is. Because unless you're a real U.S. history buff, you probably wouldn't really have any reason to know who he was. He was our 10th president, who ran as vice president in the Whig Party with William Henry Harrison. And after Harrison died in April, Tyler took over as president. This really tested the laws of the Constitution in terms of how do you win the White House without actually being elected as president, and answered those questions. By the 1820s, the Democratic-Republican Party had split into different sanctions, and Tyler, originally a Democrat, opposed Andy Jackson and Martin Van Buren and sided with the Whig Party. Switch sides. He served as a Virginia state legislator, governor, U.S. representative, and U.S. senator before his election as VP in the election of 1840. Although a Whig, he found many of the Whig policies unconstitutional and started vetoing all of them, thus switching sides again. He alienated himself from the Whig Party as a result, and that's why the Whig Party started calling him His Excellency. He was getting death threats from both parties and was expelled by the Whigs. Other than that, his contributions as a president included working with Great Britain to restore Canadian border territorial disputes and spearheading the annexation of Texas. During the American Civil War, he served in the Confederate House of Representatives because he had no other friends at that point.
And that is all, my friends, for April 6th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joe DeCristoforo. Check out my website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, and leave a comment on the comment board and let me know what you thought about today's program.
How did you think that President Wilson handled World War I? Casual history buffs, how well did you know the story about John Tyler? Wrestling fans, have you ever tried the mandible claw in the ring? Yeah, let me know what you think. Now, moving on to tomorrow's program.
The culprit ring that saved the American Revolution.
Cold War news about the domino theory. I'll wish a happy birthday to John McGraw, and John Wayne will win an Oscar. So until then, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter, as well as the website. So thanks for being great patriotic Americans, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.